Well, we've been going through Elgin Evangelical Free Church's core values and explaining what they mean. And as we live these core values, we will succeed at fulfilling our mission. And the core value this morning is healthy families. So I'd like you to say the value out loud with me. It's on the screen and it's on the sheet inside your program. Let's say it together. We will sensitively equip everyone to live biblically in a way that strengthens their unique family relationships. Now, I'm not going to keep repeating that value again and again because I don't think it's one that we actually need to memorize. We just need to understand the core of it. So that core value says two things. First of all, it says here at Elgin Evangelical Free Church, we believe that healthy families are necessary and critical to raising healthy children. And that healthy families are also critical to have a well-operating society. That healthy, strong spiritual families are God's plan for our planet. But even while we say that we are committed to building healthy, strong families, the statement also says that we recognize we live at a time where a growing number of families face very special challenges, and that a lot of families don't look the way that they did 20 or 30 years ago. We have more broken families. We have more single-parent families. We have more blended families, and we have more families that would like to have children but can't have children. And we want to be continually learning as a church what the needs of those challenged families are and how we can equip them in their unique family relationships. Now, we've got a lot to learn and a lot to grow as a church to minister to families with special needs. But we want to do that. So that's why it's a core value. Now, we have one family here that is committed to strong families and also believes in helping a child in a time of need. I'm going to ask Dave and Christy Strassner to come on up now and ask them to share something of their current journey and what they're experiencing as it relates to this value of strong, healthy families.
Our journey here started in January. The Lord, I was invited to go to a men's encounter in with some guys from work. So I went down to this men's encounter. One of the things they talked about was families, in one of the topics, which it was kind of neat. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And I learned some things. But the whole encounter really opened up my heart towards the Lord that it had been shut for a while. And then I came back and we're talking, and Christy and I said, hey, let's go on a date. And so we went on a date one night. We just dropped the kids off at Awana's and went and got popcorn at the movie theater and just sat in the car eating popcorn and driving around talking. And she's like, hey, what's our 10-year plan? What do you see us doing in 10 years from now? I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. We started thinking about all these things we could do in 10 years, you know, the kids. And so she got a text. We got a text from a friend of ours the next day. She said, listen, I need to talk to you guys about a situation. And so, long story short, with the background is that I have a strange family. My dad's brothers were not good guys, and they divorced their wives early on with living with lots of kids. And one of them, my uncle, divorced his wife, and she had some kids, and there was some trouble in the family and whatnot. We didn't really stay close. After my grandparents moved away, we didn't see them anymore, as things go. Then the whole thing. So anyway, long story short, I have a cousin who's 44 years old and has a 5-year-old daughter, but she lived with her mom, who wasn't a good situation, a lot of abuse and things like that. Their mom passed away, who was really pretty much the primary caregiver. Needless to say, my cousin got sick, and her 5-year-old daughter went to live with a liaison with the school district, who happened to be Beth Kohler. So we all know Beth Kohler, that went to church here. And so she said, hey, listen, I need to talk to you guys about hope. And okay. So we're like, yeah, we know who Hope is, you know, and whatnot, but we had never really met her or talked to her or anything like that. So that's where we came in. So go ahead and talk. I'm just going to keep getting, there's a whole crazy story behind this, but.
So basically, we did not have any relationship with Hope, but many of you have seen Hope here with us, and she is now part of our family. And so there was a need that Hope needed someone to take care of her in a time when her mom was not able to take care of her. And really, her mom is never going to be capable of caring for her, so we have stepped in. And what we really want to share with you today is that this is not us. When this situation presented itself to us, to be real honest, I was like, oh, I think we're good where we're at, God. We don't need this kid who's probably been through some sort of trauma to come in and ruffle our feathers and make things a little crazy and different. But you know how God is. He kind of has other plans that we don't know about. And I can just recall specifically after Beth had come and spoken to us and asked us if we would take Hope.
We said we'd consider it prayerfully. We consider it, which is probably blew Christy's mind that I even said that because, you know, I'm kind of a, you know, set my ways kind of guy.
And a spontaneous guy. He was ready to take her too, actually. But we prayed about it. And one day, I just remember in the morning I was getting ready and I was just had all these thoughts going through my head of how this situation could change me. It could change us. It could change our family life. It could change our kids and just have like a negative impact on us. And I was just crying out to the Lord as I was getting ready. I just had my hands up in the air and I had tears streaming down my face. And I said, God, I don't want this. I don't want this kind of pain to come into our family. And in that exact same moment, this peace just washed over me and said, it's okay. I've got it under control. And I just knew that God was saying we needed to go forward. And I also had in my mind in James where it says, don't just be hearers of my word, but do what it says. I know that God's word calls us to take care of others who are in need. And how could we not take care of a family member, even though we didn't know her and had never met her? We needed to take care of her and bring her into our family. In my bathroom, I've had this verse on a note card for months, probably, I don't know, maybe since the beginning of the year. And I've just had it sitting there, and every time I'm in the bathroom, I look at this verse and just ponder these words. And these words have really become my life verse. It's from Psalm 62:8. It says, trust in him at all times. Pour out your heart before him. He is a refuge for us. And I got to tell you, since we brought Hope into our home, it has not been easy. It's been fun to have a little person around again. But because of the situation she grew up in, it's completely opposite of the way we live our lives as a family. And there have been just a lot of ups and downs and challenges and hardships. And it's just been a great opportunity to pour out my heart to the Lord and to be real raw and honest with him with where I'm at. There have been times when I felt like a complete failure and have felt ashamed of the way I behaved towards her because my heart has not been like Jesus. But at the same time, I'm so thankful because God forgives us when we repent. And I'm so thankful because he's continuing to grow us and make us more like him. And you guys, that is not me. That's not Dave. It's not us. This is the Holy Spirit working in us. And we're just so thankful that he has chosen to use us and that he is working to make us more like him. Dave wants to talk. I guess that means I should get to talk.
But it just, we see ourselves as God sees us as this little girl. Mm-hmm. And we're that little girl that he took us in, and we don't deserve it, and we keep screwing up, mm-hmm. but he just keeps loving us and caring for us just the same. So we see God's mercy on us through her too. It's been awesome. Hasn't been easy. No, it's been trying, and some of the weeks have been hard. And the week we went before the judge and got guardianship, that was a really tough week. The devil really was working against us with her. But we got in front of that judge and said, yeah, well, we want guardianship of this little girl, and we want to take her in. And it was neat to see. It's gotten easier since then. But it's been an awesome experience.
And I think one of the neatest parts of it is just having all of you and just other friends who have come alongside us and who are praying for us and who are asking us, how are you doing? Can I come and do something with Hope for a while you get away? Or it's just such a blessing. And we know that there's not just people here, but Hope was going with her mom to the Greater Grace Church just over across the railroad tracks. And over there, they're praying. They're praying for Hope. And they had been praying for Hope for quite some time that she would get in a better situation. And it's just a blessing to know that so many people care and that God is working. So thank you all. And please continue to pray for us.
And that 10-year plan is changed a lot.
Thanks, Dave and Christy, for starting to show us what it's like to reach out and learn to minister to children and people with special needs. And let's help walk with this journey through them and pray them through this journey and catch the vision, because there's a lot more hurting families and kids out there. And let's be the church that ministers to families like that. Well, as Dave and Christy mentioned, parenting isn't for sissies, is it? But I can prove scientifically that a family that has 6 children is much more happy, content, and fulfilled than a family that has $6 million. It's true. The family with 6 children is more content than a family that has $6 million. Because the family that has $6 million still wants more. The family with 6 kids? Not so much. Now, today, I'm actually going to focus on parenting. Even though we're talking about all different kinds of families, I'm going to focus on parenting. And that's not to exclude you that have different relationships. I pointed out at the top of the handout, we've done 3 sermons lately on relationships in general that should equip all of us. But what we haven't talked about is the parenting relationship. And everybody here is part of some family unit, aren't you? I mean, maybe probably like me, a lot of you don't have children at home, but I still have children somewhere. I still have grandchildren. You still have nieces and nephews. You're part of some family group. So the principles we talk about with parenting can still be used by you to help enrich your larger family, your broader family, or to help your friends that are going through parenting challenges. You know, a survey was done of a poll of 18 to 34-year-olds, and they were asked what the most important priority in life was. In this recent survey of 18 to 34-year-olds, they said the number one priority in life is a close-knit family. That's right. The younger generation is hungry for a close-knit family. Everybody wants a close-knit family. Not everybody achieves it. And there's no perfect families because there's no perfect parents because there's no perfect people. But the God whose plan that family was gives us some guidelines in His Word of how to strengthen our families. Not only that, but He gives us an example, because God the Father, the way He parents us, can teach us how to parent our kids. So Psalm 103, verse 13, the Lord is like a father to His children. So today, we're both going to look at some biblical principles, and we're going to look at some descriptions of God the Father from Psalm 143. So later, if you want, you can go back and read Psalm 143, and you can mine some of the principles out. You see, parenting is a sacred task, and we learn from the way that God parents us. So we're going to look at the 4 functions of a family and ask ourselves 9 questions to evaluate how well we're actually doing. The first function of a family is to be a shelter from life's storms. The family is to be a shelter from life's storms. Wouldn't you agree? Life is filled with storms that kind of knock us down and blow us over. And God's plan is for the family to shelter us in the storms of life. Psalm 64, verse 10. Those who fear or revere the Lord are secure. They, that is the parents, will be a refuge for their children. God says, if you have faith in Him through Jesus Christ, your faith will be a refuge. Your family can be a place of protection for your children. But God says, if He is not in your family, then your family isn't secure. You may be enthusiastic, you may be optimistic, but you cannot be secure, because only when Jesus Christ is the center of your family can your family be a place of protection and a shelter against the storms. Now we're going to talk about several kinds of storms to shelter against. The one storm that every family faces is the storm of change, right? I mean, we change houses, we change jobs, we change schools, we change friends. Change is a storm that is constantly swirling around us. How can we and our families be a shelter from the storms? First question asked, do I hear them when they need me? Do I hear them? Psalm 145 says the Lord is close to all who call on Him. He hears their cries for help. Now, the Lord hears us when we call out to Him, and He expects us to hear, to really hear our children. You know, it said home is a place where you can say anything you want, because nobody's listening anyway. But God expects us to be listening to our children, to our nieces, to our nephews, to our grandchildren. And there's three times when it's important to be listening. Driving time, mealtime, and bedtime. Driving time. Some of you parents right now are complaining about how much time you spend chauffeuring your kids around to sporting events, to music events, to schools, to playtimes. You feel like you're a full-time chauffeur. Well, turn chauffeur time into conversation time. Turn off the CD player. Unplug the DVD players. Tell them to shut down their phones. And when you're in the car, say, this is conversation time. Ask them questions. Use drive time as listening time. Perhaps the most important listening time when I was growing up was dinner time. My wife says how she and her brother used to, after as soon as the amen was said to grace, she and her brother would try and race to see who could eat the food the fastest so they could be done eating before their father even started eating. My family was exactly the opposite. We sat at the dinner table for at least an hour, sometimes an hour and a half every night. And we shared what happened during the day. And as we shared, my parents would ask us questions and they'd lean into it. And they would try and talk about, what does that mean? How do you interpret that? How did you respond to that? How should you respond to it next time? And I can tell you, I learned more about politics and religion and values and living around my parents' dinner table on the farm than any place else. Because they listened. We had the conversations. A third time that's important to listen to your kids is bedtime. Now, when they're young, they don't even want to go to bed, right? So they're very willing to talk. You need to get them like 5 glasses of water. And then they need to go to the bathroom, right? But we learned, my wife and I, that when our kids were teenagers, that was an untapped gold mine, because they would come home late at night at curfew, and they were wound up. They were either really excited about what had happened, or they were really upset about what had happened. And so we would leave the light on in the hallway and our door open, and our rule was, when they got home, no matter what time it was, they needed to come in and kiss us goodnight. Now, that was a way of making sure they were in on curfew. But when they came in to kiss us goodnight, we'd wake up enough to say, how was your evening? How are you feeling? Now, sometimes they didn't want to talk. They just say, it was fine, good night. But a lot of time, they were just so wound up, either with excitement or frustration, they would go, blah! You know, and I think actually sitting on our bed in the dark when they couldn't actually see our faces, I think it helped create a safe environment. I'm just being honest here. And they would tell us things at night that they would never dream of telling us the next day. So if you have teenagers, just be aware that there might be a great listening time if you're willing to give up a little sleep time. It's your job as a parent to find out what the right listening times are for your kids. But here's the principle. You have to hear their words if you want to know their heart. You have to spend time to hear their words if you want to know their heart. The second way to make your family a shelter from life's storm is ask, do I hug them when they're hurting? You all know this part of the story of the prodigal son. But when the prodigal son was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. When did he hug his son? Not when his son was lovable, but when his son was hurting, when his son had just failed and was rejected, when he needed a hug, that's when the father hugged him, even in the father's embarrassment and perhaps shame. Two of the biggest storms of life are failure and rejection. And we all fail sometimes. I mean, we fail at sports, we fail at school, we fail at friendships, we fail at love, we fail at businesses, but failure doesn't feel so bad when you can go home to hugs. Now, we're all rejected sometimes, you know. We don't get picked for a sports team. We don't get chosen by that client. Our company doesn't get chosen. We get rejected by lovers and friends. But rejection doesn't feel so bad when you can go home to hugs. You see, family are your fans even when you fail. Family are the ones that hug you when everyone else is hurting you. Can I tell you how important this is? I know a woman, and she's in her 70s, and she's struggled her whole life with being an overachiever, still in her 70s, still trying to prove herself. And if you talk to her to find out why, she can't remember a time her dad ever played with her on the floor, ever hugged her, or ever encouraged her or affirmed her. So inside, she's still trying to win his love. Family is supposed to be the place that hugs you when you are hurting. Number three, the third way to be a shelter from life's storms, do I help them when they are in trouble? Do I hear them? Do I hug them? Do I help them when they are in trouble? Once again, Psalm 145, the Lord helps the fallen and lifts those bent beneath their load. The Lord protects all those who love him. Home is where we help each other up when life's storms knock us down. So a few years ago, I saw the perfect Mother's Day card. It said, Mom, now that you and I have a mature adult relationship, there's just one thing I want you to know. You're the first person I think of when I fall down, go boom. And it's true. Remember when you would fall down, go boom, and you were hurting. What did you want? You wanted your mother or father's arm. You wanted their help. You wanted family. You wanted safety and security of home. That's why almost every childhood game, the goal is to be home free. And in baseball, you're safe at home. Home is to be the place we're free to be ourselves, the place where we get the hugs, we get the hearing, we get the help that we need. And that means, parents, you need to be there and you need to be available and have the time to give them the help. Is your family a shelter against life storms? Do you really hear them? Are you quick to hug them when they need it, not when you feel like giving it? And are you quick to give them the help that they need? Well, the second function of a family is to be a school for life's learning. A school for life's learning. Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, bring them, that's your children, up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Family is where we learn the basic skills of life. And how do we do it? It says by two things, discipline and by instruction. Family is God's plan for helping children move from parental control to self-control to God's control. In other words, to help children move from depending on their parents to being independent to depending on God. Now, how do we help them make that journey? Question number four, do I correct them wisely, not harshly? It's correcting them. That's discipline. The Bible has a lot to say about discipline. There's three proverbs here. Those who love their children care enough to discipline them. To discipline a child produces wisdom. Discipline your children and they will give you peace of mind and make your heart glad. And that means, you know, whenever parents say, "You are driving me crazy," that means you just haven't found a very effective way of disciplining them, because disciplining will give you peace of mind. Now, my parental form of discipline, I took it from a country song of a few years ago. A young man's coming to the house to pick up the father's daughter, take her out on a date. And he says, "That's fine, you go have a good time. Don't mind me, because I'll just be sitting here cleaning my gun." You remember the song? If you've had young daughters, you say, "Sounds good to me." God gives parents because children don't always know the right thing to do. And they don't always do what they know is right. So God gives parents to correct them before their bad decisions become bad habits, before their bad habits become very destructive in their consequences. So parents, as the Bible says, if you love them, you will discipline them. But there's a right way and a wrong way to discipline your child, and there's two problems when you're disciplining your child. There's two mistakes that we make. One is inconsistency, and one is to do it harshly. Inconsistency. You haven't set clear boundaries. Or the boundaries change. Or husband and wife don't agree on the boundaries and the kids play you against each other. Or you have clear boundaries, but you don't consistently enforce them. I'm too tired to get in the hassle, so they get away with it. And what have they learned? They've just learned there are no boundaries. You can push the boundaries. The boundaries are flexible. And they never know how you're going to react. Inconsistency. And, you know, one thing that a lot of parents do that I go, "Really?" They say, "I'm going to count to five." Well, what have you just done? You've taught the child they don't need to obey you until you hit number four. How does that help anything? The other problem with parenting is to do it too harshly, and God says a lot about that as well. Psalm 145, 8. The Lord is slow to get angry. Parents, be slow to get angry. Ephesians 6, 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way that you treat them. Colossians 3, 21. Fathers, do not aggravate your children or they will become discouraged. Don't aggravate your children. Don't provoke your children by being inconsistent or by being harsh. So let me just give you a few quick, simple rules for disciplining your children. And first is set clear boundaries. And husbands and wives agree on them. Second is be consistent in the application of the boundaries. Third, what you're punishing is rebellion or defiance, that stamped foot that says, "I will not," not childishness. Children will make mistakes. Children will be self-centered. Children will be forgetful. Don't confuse childishness with defiance. Limit discipline to open rebellion and defiance. Next, never act in anger. If you're angry, back away. Calm down, or you will say or do things that you regret later. And always, always reaffirm your love for them. Many of you already learned that. After you do whatever way you're going to punish them, then you hug them and say, "I love you. You know, I'm not doing this because I don't like you. I'm doing this because I love you. And I don't want you to make mistakes that will hurt you in the future." Ask yourself, do I correct my children wisely, not harshly? Question number five, do I instruct them spiritually? Isaiah 38:19, parents tell their children about your faithfulness. It's your job to continually be telling your children about God and His work in your life. I think sometimes parents make the mistake, they only talk about what God has done in the Bible. No! They want to know God's alive today, be talking about what He's doing in your life, about answered prayer, about things that you're learning, about things that God is doing at the church. That's our job, to just naturally be telling our children about what God has done in our life. See, what can families teach children that society and schools can't? We can teach them values. Wouldn't you agree if we leave it up to schools or society to teach our kids values, we're sunk? I mean, they can't agree on values. The only values they agree on often aren't good values. That's our job. So what values are you teaching your children about how to use money, about how to use time, about how to relate to people, about how to relate to God? Sometimes parents say to me, well, Dick, I don't want to push my spiritual values on my kids. I want them to make their own decision. Hogwash. If you don't teach your children spiritual values, you just taught them that there are no spiritual values. And God is not an option. Teaching them about God and His values is the most important part of your life. In fact, it's part of your job description. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 6 and 7. Commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands. Repeat them again and again and again and again to your children. Talk to them when you are at home and when you are on the road and when you are going to bed and when you are getting up. In other words, talk to your children all the time about the Lord and His expectations and His values. Because here's the truth. Your children will develop personal values. The only question is where they're going to develop them from, right? Now, here's a frightening statistic. Tweens and teens in America average 1,000 hours a year on the TV or watching videos on some device. Add on to that, they now, just in the last two decades, spend another 1,800 hours a year on a smartphone or on a computer. That's 2,800 hours a year that they are on some sort of media device, okay? Now take all the time they spend at church and take Sunday school and church and youth group and Awana and children's church and add it all together, and it might be 300 hours a year. Do you see the problem here? If you leave it up to the church to teach your kids values, it's a losing game. You know, think of the church like Home Depot. What does Home Depot say? You can do it. We can help. Parents, you can do it. We can help. Children are in church maybe 1% of the time. They're in school 16% of the time. They're in the home or family environment 83% of the time. You have 83% of the opportunity for teaching your children values. So let me ask you the question, what values do you want your children to pack and take with them when they leave home? When my kids were younger and we'd go on vacation, in order to teach them responsibility, Nance would give each of them a list where she had written all the things that she wanted them to pack in their suitcase. Some of you do that, right? You make a list. This is what you need to take on your vacation. Well, if that's important for vacation, how much more important it is for them to pack the right values to take when they go off to college or go off to get married and make a life? So do you have a list of the values you want to teach your children? Are you intentionally working on those values so by the time they leave home, they got them? Because if you don't make an I will list now, you'll make an I wish list later. I wish I had given them those values. Be a school for life's learning. Correct them wisely. Instruct them spiritually. Question number 6, to be a school, ask, do I set an example that is godly? Do I set an example that is godly? Proverbs chapter 20, verse 7. The godly walk with integrity. Blessed are the children who follow them. If you want your kids to live right, you have to set an example that they can follow. You know, I think everybody, you've probably heard the saying, parents can tell but never teach until they practice what they preach. You heard that? Parents can tell but never teach until they practice what they preach. And by our example, we teach two different kinds of things, and they're kinds of things that are only taught by our example. By our example, we teach relationships and we teach character. The way your kids will relate, the way you relate to people as an adult is pretty much how you learn to relate to people by watching how your mother and father and family related to each other. And the same for you. So when your kids watch your example, will they learn how to talk through problems, how to settle disagreements, how to forgive, how to be patient? Or will they learn how to be demanding, how to fight? When your kids watch your relationships, will they learn how to be patient and kind and supportive and gentle and gracious and giving? Or will they learn how to be harsh and combative? What are kids learning by watching your relationships within the family and with other people? Now, the second thing that kids learn is character. I mean, to a large extent, who I am today and who you are today is the character that we saw modeled by our parents or by other role models. Finish these sentences. Like father, like the apple doesn't fall too far from. Yeah, we all know that character comes from example. So is your character the one that you want your children to have as they grow up? And you want them to model for their children as well. A few years ago, there was a song by Rodney Atkins titled Watching You. And every time I hear this song, I tear up. And as I read the words, some of you are going to be humming the melody in your head. Driving through town, just my boy and me, with a happy meal in his booster seat, knowing that he couldn't have the toy till his nuggets were done. A green traffic light turned straight to red. I hit my brakes and mumbled under my breath as flies went flying and his orange drink covered his lap. Well, then my four-year-old said a four-letter word that started with S, and I was concerned. So I said, son, now where did you learn to talk like that? He said, I've been watching you, Dad. Ain't that cool? I'm your buckaroo. I want to be like you. And eat all my food and grow as tall as you are. You got cowboy boots and camo pants. Yeah, we're just alike, ain't we, Dad? I want to do everything you do, so I've been watching you. We got back home and I went into the barn and I bowed my head and prayed real hard and said, Lord, please help me help my stupid self. Then this side of bedtime later that night, turning on my son's Scooby-Doo nightlight, he crawled out of bed and he got down on his knees. He closed his eyes and folded his little hands and spoke to God like he was talking to a friend. And I said, son, now where'd you learn to pray like that? He said, I've been watching you, Dad. Ain't that cool? I'm your buckaroo. I want to be like you. I want to eat all my food and grow as tall as you are. We like fixing things. We like holding mom's hand. I want to do everything like you do, so I've been watching you. And that's where it's at. Do you set a godly example? The fourth function of a family is to be a playground for life's joy. You know, you've heard the saying, the family that prays together stays together. My wife changed that into a family that plays together stays together. And we would say that all the time when we were going out on family outings. The family that plays together stays together. 20 years later, they're grown and have kids of their own, and they still can't wait to get together and play together as family because they learned it then. The family is God's format for fun. It's a haven for happiness. So ask yourself, number 7, do I take time to enjoy them? Psalm 127, children are a gift from the Lord. How joyful is the man whose quiver is full of them. Children are a gift from God for us to enjoy just for a short period of time, so make it count. How do you make it count? Look for the humor in everyday situations. Look for the humor in childishness and mistakes and upsets. I'm going to drop some illustrations out here, but just one quick illustration. A family was fishing in the Alaska wilderness, true story. And the father had walked downstream to find a better place to fish and left his wife and two girls there. And as they're fishing, a baby moose walked out of the forest into the meadow. And they're watching it and they're giggling. And they're, come here, baby moose. And the baby moose took some wobbly steps toward them. And the excitement is going up. How fun is this? Then the mother moose stepped out of the forest, sensed the danger, her head went down, her antlers are forward, her nostrils are flared, and she starts charging at the kids. Well, the mother sees what's happening. She throws her fishing pole to the side. She starts charging the moose, screaming at the top of her lungs, waving her hands wildly until she scared the moose. And the moose veered to the side and took its little moose and went back in the woods. Well, Dad heard the commotion and ran back and said, "What's going on?" And the two kids said, "You wouldn't believe it. Mom was so awesome. Mom scared a moose away using nothing but her face." Relax and learn how to enjoy your kids' childishness and find the humor in everyday situations. Do you enjoy your children? Do your children think that you enjoy them? Tony Evans tells a story of a friend of his who was a professional baseball player. And when he was growing up, his dad played ball with him in their backyard. And it was so popular, other kids in the neighborhood would join him playing ball. And it was pretty rough on the backyard. And he said there was a lot of bare spots and muddy spots. And one day Mom opened the window and hollered out, "Find some else to play ball. You're killing my grass." And he said, my dad called back and said, "Honey, we're not raising grass. We're raising children." So what are you raising? Are you raising grass or children? Are you raising an immaculately clean house? Are you raising children? Are you raising the absolute perfect meals? Are you raising children? Are you raising things that look good on Facebook to all your friends? Or are you raising children? Are you taking the time to enjoy them? UCLA did a research project with 2,500 fifth graders, found out their number one frustration was not enough time with my parents. And that's especially true when we have two working parents and all the busyness. There's no way to turn a family into a playground, expect to make time to play. Period. And I'm not talking about the time you spend chauffeuring them around. That's turn it into conversation time, but that's not play time. And I'm not talking about the time you sit in a bleacher watching them doing something else. That's not play time. You have to create time to play together as a family. And you have to protect it to be a playground for life's joy. Another thing to be a playground for life's joy, number eight, and that's ask, do I love their other parent? Ouch. Do I love their other parent? Ecclesiastes 9:9, live happily with the woman you love. The wife God gives you is your reward. If your children can't learn how to love their future husband or wife by watching you, where are they going to learn it? And if what they learn from watching you is bickering and arguing, then Mark 3:25 says a family splintered by feuding will fall apart. I did a lot of things wrong as a father. I mean, you listed things a parent could do wrong. I probably did most of them wrong, but there's one thing I never did wrong. My kids always knew how much I loved their mother, that I was besotted with their mother. And they saw how well I treated their mother. Now, why did I get that one thing right? Because I watched how much my dad loved my mother and how well he treated her. And I wanted to be his buckaroo and to be just like you. So that's a gift that my dad gave to me that I was able to give to my kids. And now I'm watching them give that to their children. One of the greatest gifts you can give your children is to love their other mother or father. And if you're not there, do whatever it takes. Get counseling, get help. The final function of a family is to be a launching pad for ministry. Be a shelter from life's storms, a school for life's learning, a playground for life's joy, a launching pad for ministry. Joshua 24:15 says, "For as me and my family, we will serve the Lord." Have you ever made that kind of commitment? We're going to serve the Lord. I think for too many families today, it's really, "As for me and my family, we will use the Lord." Because the Lord only becomes important when we really need Him and we're in trouble, right? Rather than "we will serve the Lord." Question number 9, our last question, do I serve together with them? Very interesting passage, 1 Corinthians 16. "You know that Stephanas and his household were the first of the harvest of believers in Greece, and they are spending their lives in service of God's people." Do you get that? Stephanas and his family followed the Lord and now serving God's people. "I urge you, dear brothers and sisters, to submit to them and others like them who serve with such devotion." We are to be an example where if you love the Lord, you serve God's people and you serve God's people with devotion. Have you ever thought of your family as a ministry team? Some of you are part of a ministry team, whether it's Awana or a children's church, right? Or have you thought of your family as a ministry team? Because if you haven't, you're missing an important part of God's design to serve together. You say, "Dick, how can we serve together?" Well, let me throw out some ideas for you to think about. Acts of hospitality. My parents had missionaries and traveling itinerant evangelists into our home. We learned a lot that way. You can have missionaries into your home. How about international students at Judson or at Elgin Community College? Opening your home to hospitality, to people in need, so that your children can see they can be part of that ministry. How about visit a nursing home and minister there? How about taking a child from Lydia Home Orphanage and having them visit your home during the holidays? How about become part of the Safe Families program, which is doing for children at need and at risk what Dave and Christy are doing for their relative? How about, as a family, talk about ways you can show appreciation to other people in the church that minister to you or your kids? You know, talk about what can we do to thank the Awana workers, the children's church workers, the Sunday school workers, and come up with a family project to show your appreciation. Supporting a missionary together. My family always had certain missionaries that we supported and we prayed for and we communicated with. Go on missions as your kids get older. Go on missions trips together with them. Adopt missions programs. Work in a church ministry. Sometimes you can work together with your child in a church ministry, especially when they're a teenager. Talk about it as a family and come up with some ideas. Be a launching pad for ministry. Psalm 145, verse 4 says, "Let each generation tell its children of your mighty acts. Let them proclaim your power." Let each generation tell your children of your mighty acts. God says a family is like a relay race where you are passing the faith on from generation to generation and generation. The way you parent affects not only your children, it affects their children and succeeding generations. Nance and I were out east, and we were in Williamsburg, Virginia. And all of a sudden, a friend of our son's from high school walked up to us. We bumped into him in Williamsburg, Virginia. And he said, "I want to go out to dinner with you." And he took us out to dinner that night, and he said, "You know, I grew up in a very dysfunctional and broken home." And he explained his mother's situation, and his brother was on drugs, and his sister's been divorced and in prison. And his life is completely together. And he said, "I want to thank you, because when I was Eric's friend, you and Nancy were my role models. Because I didn't have role models at home, and I watched how you parented Eric. And I said, one day, I want to grow up to be like them." And here it is 20 years later, and he's meeting with us to thank him for the impact we had. We had no idea. That's the kind of impact you have. It's not just your children. It's their children, and it's the people who are watching. So for God's sake, let's be committed to building strong, healthy families together that are a shelter from life's storms, that are as a school for learning life's lessons, that are a playground for learning to enjoy life, and are a launching pad for ministry. Will you pray with me? Lord, those of us that have been parents sit here usually with regrets because we know we could have and should have done a better job. We know when we weren't available. We know when we overreacted in discipline. And we carry a certain amount of guilt. And Lord, I pray that you would help those in that situation to forgive ourselves, to know that no parent is perfect, but that your grace is sufficient. And for the younger parents, Lord, may this challenge them to be intentional and to be disciplined in the way that they parent. And that everyone here to trust in you and your grace to teach us how to be a father like you, a grandparent like you, a niece, an aunt and an uncle, to treat other people as you would. So that your love, your forgiveness, your grace, your godliness would flow through us, through strong families with strong children, building strong generations in a strong society. We ask it in your name. Amen.